Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison on this Friday morning. Glad you're with us for today. Things we're looking forward to this morning. Going to talk a little bit about IU baseball. They picked up a win last night. Also found out who Indiana's opponent is going to be in the 2019 Jimmy V Classic. And we also find out that the Indiana Pacers are going to sit down and chat with Romeo a little bit. We'll talk about all of those things coming up here in just a moment. Our lineup today, we have Jared Morris of Assembly Call coming up on our show today, along with Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star. They'll be joining us here a little bit later on the program today. The lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham, mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and receive $1 off a box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany, just off Grantline Road. Let's take a look at the headlines today. IU baseball improved to 34-19 with a 7-5 comeback win over Rutgers last night in Bloomington. Scarlet Knights posted 4 in the fifth inning to take the lead, and then another run in the sixth to actually take a 5-4 lead at that point. But in the bottom of the sixth inning, IU scored 3, the final 2 coming on a Matt Lloyd home run with Matt Gorski on board. The Hoosiers will face Rutgers again tonight at 6 and tomorrow at 12 noon on Senior Day. That'll be the final game of the regular season, and the Big Ten tourney itself will begin May the 22nd, run through the 26th, and that's being played in Omaha, Nebraska this year. Boys track sectionals were held around the state last night for the boys, and locally, one sectional was able to run to completion, while the other was interrupted by a thunderstorm that lasted for over an hour and led to the meet being postponed until tonight. Down at Corydon, sunshine and a New Albany Bulldogs sectional championship as the Bulldogs won 159-148 over Floyd Central in that 12-team sectional field. A different story at Jeffersonville as a storm rolled through about 8 o'clock. Lots of lightning and everything shut down for safety reasons. Lightning lasted till after 9 o'clock and the group decided that it would be better off to postpone that meet until tonight. 7 events are left to be completed. Competition will be resumed at 6 o'clock tonight at Jeff High School. Indiana's opponent for the 2019 Jimmy V Classic is now set. We knew the 4 teams, just did not know how they would be matched up. Now we know the Hoosiers will play UConn in the annual doubleheader at Madison Square Garden, with Louisville and Texas Tech facing off in the other game. Times have not been released for that Tuesday night, December 10th game. This is the 25th year for the event and the fourth time the Hoosiers have been invited to participate. The Indiana Pacers showing interest in local star Romeo Langford. According to a report today in the Indianapolis Star, Indiana will meet with New Albany native and Indiana University standout Romeo Langford this weekend in Chicago. Whether Romeo would be available still at that number 18 slot in the draft remains a question. Golden State Warriors, the winner. They're up 2-0 in the NBA championships last night in the only game played in that tournament. PGA Golf getting ready to, or actually already underway, I believe, this morning. And then, of course, the Preakness coming up tomorrow for you horse racing fans. Those of you that were listening heard a report on both of those events just a few moments ago from here at WXVW. Got a little bit of insight into both the horse race and the golf tournament. So those are our headlines here this morning for the Hoosier Report. We're going to take a break here for just a second. We'll be back with Jared Morris of Assembly Call, and that'll be coming up next. Kyle Neddenrip in the final section of our show today. So those coming up here on the Big X, WXVW, Jeffersonville.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison here on a Friday morning. Matt will be back with you on Monday. Our first guest today on the program, Jared Morris, as usual, with the Assembly Call, joining us on this Friday. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Lee. How are you doing?
So far, so good, but subject to change at any moment, I'm afraid. Well, at the course. Absolutely. The first question it seems like always ask of anybody that has any connection or knowledge about IU is what's going on with the recruiting. So I shall do the same thing this morning. Any late news, any new names being popped up that would complement this 2019 class?
Not really that I've heard. I mean, most of the, you know, the recruiting news that you hear now and offers that you see are guys in the class of 2020. And obviously a lot's happening there, you know, with some of the in-state guys like Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway, and then some of the new names that you're hearing like Matt Cross and RJ Davis, who are from out east. But, you know, really not hearing a lot from 2019. Obviously Lester Quinones chose Memphis. No one really expects Trendon Watford to be picking Indiana when he makes his choice. So, you know, right now the Hoosiers have, you know, what we project to be 11 scholarships kind of assigned for next season with two open. And, you know, I would certainly like to see, you know, maybe a grad transfer guard to come in and add a little bit of experience to the backcourt. But right now, you know, there aren't any names that I've heard. So we'll just have to see if the cut, you know, I'm sure the coaching staff, while they're probably okay, you know, with banking one scholarship for next season, I have to think that they would like to bolster, you know, that bench just a little bit, you know, given the shooting needs the team has, and just to have some insurance in case of injury, because we saw last year, you know, how, you know, when you really get depleted, how much that can hurt. So I have to think they're out there trying to find some guys that would fit, you know, without wanting to just force it and take anybody. But right now, you know, I don't really know who that would be.
Yeah, I've obviously never been a college coach, but I would think you try to weigh whether bringing this young man in is a positive or a negative at this point, and you certainly don't want to bring someone in that upsets the chemistry on the team. So you walk a fine line there, I would think, at this point in the season.
Yeah, you know, and you also, you know, of course you want to, you know, do as much as you can to put yourself in a position to win games next year, especially for a coach who hasn't made the NCAA tournament in 2 years. You know, but you also want to make sure that, you know, that you're not stunting the development of any young players. And I think that's why getting a guy like Joey Brunk was, you know, really a great addition for Indiana, because he really filled the need as a young guy. And even though he's a grad transfer, he'll be around for a couple of years. You know, so you really kind of feel like you can, you know, invest in him, and he's going to give you a couple of solid seasons. So, you know, it's trying to find a fit. And obviously Archie is a coach that's very defense-oriented, so you want to find a guy who can, who's going to buy in on that end of the court. And like you said, you know, not upset the chemistry that you're trying to build. So, you know, it's a challenge. And, you know, obviously for any good player, a lot of other teams are going to be going after him too. So, you know, right now, you know, the Hoosiers have the one grad transfer in Brunk. And, you know, just we'll see if they can add anybody else before the season begins.
Yeah, and probably without injuries, Indiana will probably be okay for next season if they can keep everybody healthy. But a couple of guys going down, and we saw it last year as well, there's just not a lot of bench strength there, it looks like to me. You've got a couple of guys that can come off and consistently help you, but and like most teams in the NCAA, you just can't afford injuries to key people.
Yeah, injuries are definitely a big part of it. You know, you want to have the depth there, you know, both for games, but also, you know, kind of the underrated factor there is for practice, you know, so that you have enough good players to field full competitive practices. You know, and I would say that, you know, with the 11 guys that Indiana has right now, you know, I think that there are, you know, ways that you could, you know, project that team to be pretty good, maybe even, you know, better and more balanced than what this, you know, than what this year's team was. But, you know, I do think that there are a couple holes that they'd really like to fill. You know, we all have high expectations for Jerome Hunter if he can get on the court, but he's a guy that we haven't seen play yet. You know, we don't know for sure that he's going to be out there. And he really is the guy that you kind of pencil in to, you know, filling in that wing scoring role that, that Romeo Langford takes with him. And I don't think anybody expects that Jerome can match Romeo's, you know, fantastic production from his freshman season. But you're going to need someone who can get you points on the wing, you know. And so, you know, right now that's a bit of a question mark. And I think my other question mark is, you know, what's the situation at backup point guard? Because I think we all expect Rob Phinisee to, you know, kind of take the ball and, you know, be able to play as many minutes as he can handle. But, you know, we've seen that Devontae Green and Al Durham function much better playing off the ball. You know, they can handle it a little bit, but they're better in secondary playmaking roles. And so if you don't have, you know, a true point guard there behind Phinisee, now when he goes out of the game, you're going to have to slide Durham or Devontae over there, and you're kind of playing them in a role that maybe isn't best suited for what they can do. So those are two areas that I think if Indiana could shore up one of them with another player, you'd feel much better heading into to next season.
And this is a question I'm sure everybody knows the answer to except me, but in Jerome Hunter's case, has he been practicing, working out with the team, doing different drills at this point in his career at IU?
I don't know for sure, because that's something that, you know, obviously the team and the university are pretty tight-lipped about. They showed some, you know, kind of, you know, workout videos of him doing some individual drills, doing some weightlifting stuff several weeks back. That was posted on social media, and that obviously got everybody very encouraged. I don't believe he is yet back to the point of playing, you know, full contact 5-on-5. I don't believe he's been cleared for that yet. So, you know, we just have to kind of wait and see, and it's kind of a tricky, confusing thing, because it's, you know, as people have often said, you know, it's not an injury like an ACL where it's like, okay, it's back and you're cleared and ready to go. It's kind of a condition that sounds like maybe it could, you know, come back, or, you know, even though he had, you know, surgery to help alleviate it, whatever it is, you know, just it sounds like it's something that's a little bit more complicated and just a little bit, you know, kind of trickier that they have to be careful with. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, we all want to, you know, kind of know for sure and be able to, you know, write his name in pen in the rotation. But I really think it's the kind of thing we're just going to have to wait till much closer to the start of the season, you know, maybe even the exhibition games in Hoosier Hysteria, you know, to kind of see, to see where he's at, see if he's, you know, been able to practice fully, hopefully. And I don't think there's been any, you know, public indication certainly that he's not on track for that. But it's just something we're going to have to wait and see.
Our guest this morning, Jared Morris of Assembly Call. Jared, I saw last night that a four-star guard that had signed with Michigan, Jalen Wilson, I believe is the name, has asked for a release now that Beilein has left that program. And would that be a player, if he receives his release, would that be a player that IU might be interested in since he is a guard?
Yeah, I mean, he was a highly regarded recruit for them. I'm sure if there was any mutual interest, you know, from him in, that Indiana would be interested, but he's not a guy that I recall Indiana being very much involved with before he went to Michigan. So that would seem like an unlikely one. But I mean, you know, the coaches wouldn't be doing their due diligence if they didn't, you know, kind of reach out and just kind of gauge what the interest level is. But that's certainly not one that I'm holding my breath for.
All right. Speaking of Michigan, are you hearing any chatter about names. Lavelle Jordan, I think, has been mentioned. Juwan Howard has been mentioned. And I saw this morning that Shaka Smart's name was thrown into the mix, who's down at Texas. So are you hearing anything at this point?
That's surprising. I heard that Billy Donovan and Brad Stevens were going to be co-head coaches at Michigan.
Why not?
throw the IU fan base into a much bigger tizzy. No, I've heard the same names that you have. I saw that Shaka Smart was interviewing Luke Yaklich, who's, you know, like Michigan's defensive savant that has helped their defensive renaissance over the last couple of years. I saw that he was interviewing him at Texas, but I hadn't seen that there was interest from the Michigan side towards Shaka Smart. Wouldn't surprise me by any means. But yeah, I've heard the other names that you've had, that you just mentioned there. So it's, that one's going to be an interesting one because, I mean, Beeline obviously was one of the best coaches, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country, and really had built a culture and a system there where you just kind of penciled them in the top three of the conference every single season. And they really had found a way to, recruit, not always, of course, getting the five-star McDonald's All-American guys, but getting really talented players that fit their system. And then on an annual basis, being able to tweak things a little bit, to kind of match the personnel as well, which is, really what you have to do to succeed in college basketball. So, I don't know. I mean, they're going to be very hard-pressed to find a guy that comes anywhere close to being what Beeline, was right now, what he had turned Michigan into. And it'll be interesting to see if they try to get somebody that, kind of coaches a similar system or in a similar style, or if they do, if they end up doing what Indiana did, when they hired Archie Miller, which was, really, a huge change from the Tom Crean era. Now, the end of the Tom Crean era wasn't successful, so Indiana was looking to make a change, and Michigan's had a lot of success, you would think. They would try to find some continuity, but Beeline is a, as many people have described him, I mean, he's an offensive genius, kind of a basketball genius in the way that he does things. So I don't know that there's going to be a great proxy out there for what he tried to do. So no matter who they hire, I think, we're going to see some pretty big changes to Michigan basketball. And that's, kind of inevitable when you have a legendary, really successful coach like him that moves on.
Yeah, and he's old school. You don't see many guys that start out coaching in high school and then work your way up through the ranks to where you end up at a Michigan. And, it just doesn't happen that way very much anymore. So, and since he's relatively close to my age, I was excited about having somebody that age, but then there are others out there as well. But I was surprised that he left the college ranks to go to the NBA at 66 years old. You have similar thoughts or just seem like natural to you to do it at this time in his life?
I was surprised the moment I saw it just because, I hadn't really been thinking about it. There hadn't really been any reports out there, like that. So that kind of surprised me. But then as you read about it and you start to kind of learn more about him, it really became less and less surprising. And Brendan Quinn, who writes for The Athletic, has written a great profile of Beeline, and wrote some really good articles about this in particular, this story. You remember he was, close to taking the Detroit Pistons job last year. So it's not like NBA interest, for Beeline in either direction is new. I mean, this was a story last offseason. And, as you alluded to, I mean, his coaching career has just been one step up after the next. And he's famously only been a head coach, has never had an assistant coaching position, went from high school and just kind of went up that ladder, all the way to, almost winning at the highest level at Michigan, but not quite being able to, to get a championship. But this was really the last step for him, and as you mentioned, being, in his 60s, there may not have been many more opportunities for him to do this and try it out. And he seems like a guy who has just always wanted to measure himself at the next level, and the NBA is the next level now. So, it'll be really interesting to see how he does. I mean, I think a lot of college basketball fans and Big Ten fans will be rooting for him, to go into the NBA and do really well. And, so I think in that sense, it doesn't surprise me, even though the initial report of him leaving was just a little bit of a shock because we, maybe hadn't been expecting it.
Jared Morris, Assembly Call, our guest this morning. You had a podcast talking about a report card for both the Indiana Hoosiers and Archie Miller. Share with us a little bit your thoughts on, after 2 years at the helm, Archie Miller's coaching job, and report as well, report card on the Hoosiers 2 years into his coaching career.
Yeah, we really, for those two episodes, we really focused on Archie and the job that he's done. And I think, you know, it's difficult when you're at a school like Indiana with the expectations that there are, and, you know, seeing what a coach like Chris Holtmann has done at Ohio State, you know, to really be overall that pleased with the success that's happened on the court his first two seasons. And there have been plenty of extenuating circumstances, you know, completely changing the system, all the injuries from last year, on and on. And yet, you know, still to not have made an NCAA tournament yet in those, you know, in those two seasons, you know, I think it's hard to give him anything higher than a C with, you know, with the overall on-court performance. And you might even be justified going a tad lower than that. I think where there are some positives, obviously, is, you know, on the recruiting trail and, you know, rebuilding the relationships in the state of Indiana, getting some really good recruits in the state, getting the last two, you know, Indiana Mr. Basketballs, and, you know, seeming to be building that defensive culture that he wants to build, which, if you look at other programs, you know, like a Virginia and some other schools that have, you know, tried to install this defensive system, it can take 2, 3, 4 years to really see those results. And so I think you really need to be a little bit patient there. You know, so I think overall, you know, looking at his, you know, body of work so far at Indiana, you know, at kind of a B level, maybe a B minus level, simply because you haven't seen the success on the court and maybe he hasn't been able to maximize the talent that he has had. But I think there are still some good signs, some positive signs, you know, pointing up for the future if, when he gets his players in here and everybody is bought into the system, you can start to see that on-court success come, because obviously none of the rest of it matters if you don't start winning basketball games at a higher clip.
Well, a year ago at this time, I think the interest level and the excitement level sky high from IU fans, having just gotten Romeo Langford and everything was looking roses and lollipops and all that. The Trace Jackson signing, while very good, doesn't seem to have piqued the interest quite as much as a year ago, and I think it's safe to say that a lot of Indiana fans are very skeptical about the upcoming 19-20 season.
Yeah, and with good reason. You know, I mean, I think you lose 12 out of 13 like Indiana did last year, and you have a season that begins with such high hopes and with such, you know, high success on the court. You know, there's going to be some skepticism. I think that's natural. I think it needs to be, you know, skepticism that is, you know, that is fair, you know, which is, you know, I think you have to acknowledge some of the extenuating circumstances from last year. But, you know, I feel a little bit more skeptical now than I anticipated feeling 2 years in, you know, and I think, you know, maybe that, you know, the lack of excitement, you know, is just, you know, a reflection of a fan base that, you know, is tired of missing the NCAA tournament. And you know, just kind of had their hopes dashed a little bit last year. So I think it really sets up an important third season for Archie. I'm sure he understands that more than anybody else. But, you know, if they can, you know, kind of turn things around and show, you know, a little bit more cohesion on both ends of the court, a little bit more consistency in their approach and in their chemistry, then, you know, I think you'll see, you know, Indiana fans be very quick to, you know, embrace the team and embrace the Archie Miller era again, just as they were heading into next season. But, you know, you enter your third season with a coach, you really want to start seeing the progress on the court and not have it all just be about, you know, recruiting wins and, you know, culture changes and system changes and all of that. So I think that's why this sets up to be a really pivotal year for him.
What does the Big Ten look like for 19-20 as you look down the known quantities, the kids that are either in the program and coming back, or the kids that are have been recruited coming on campus? So does it look like a good, solid conference that's going to put 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 teams in the Big Ten tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks to be a really competitive conference again. You know, I think Michigan State stands head and shoulders above everybody else right now with, you know, the best player in the conference in Cassius Winston, you know, the best and longest tenured coach in Tom Izzo, and the best incoming recruiting class. They're going to be the odds-on favorite. And then, you know, you've got some schools like, you know, Maryland obviously has a lot of talent. Purdue loses Carson Edwards, but they've got a lot of key players back, and I think Matt Painter has put himself, you know, in that position of Big Ten coaches where it's like, well, you know, I don't really know, you know, you don't quite know how this roster is going to work out and who the go-to guy is going to be, but you kind of have faith in Painter to figure it out. And so I think you know, you expect Purdue to be up there again. Michigan would have been in that, you know, even though they have question marks losing a lot of guys, but now they have a lot of question marks without Beilein, you know, whereas, you know, you might have trusted him before. And then I think you've got some other teams, you know, like in Ohio State where if Caleb Wesson comes back, you would expect them to be there in the top four. And then there's some question mark teams, you know, and I would put Indiana in there to where they could be a top four or five team. And yet, you know, you also see enough questions there that, you know, they could be a team that falls into the second half of the conference. You know, if they get, you know, bad luck and some of those questions, you know, in terms of guys stepping forward like a Justin Smith or a Devontae Green, you know, if they're not able to progress as they need to. And the three teams, you know, that I think are really interesting in the Big Ten next year are Illinois, Penn State, and Rutgers. You know, three teams who really played much better in the second half of the season, have a lot of guys back. Are they able to, you know, kind of take what they did in the second half of the season, build on it, and become, you know, a team that jumps over maybe a team like a Michigan or like an Indiana or like a Wisconsin, you know, if those teams struggle? You know, can an Illinois, Penn State, or a Rutgers end up being a team that finishes in the top half of the conference? I wouldn't bet on it, but I think they showed enough at the end of last season, you know, to kind of show you that there's some potential there. So I think it's going to be, you know, I don't know if the conference will be as good as it was this year because it's losing a lot of good, experienced players. But it's going to be deep, and it's going to be competitive again. You know, and so obviously Indiana's going to have to be ready for that and for the night-in, night-out battles that the Big Ten provides.
It seems that from some of the stories that I've read that a lot of people are pointing toward Michigan State as being the going into the season, the cream of the crop in the Big Ten. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. No question about it. I mean, they've got, like I said, you know, the best player, the best coach, and they've got a good incoming recruiting class. They've got some young guys that really seem to come into their own toward the end of the season. You know, if you told me right now that someone other than Michigan State won the Big Ten next year, I'd be surprised. Not shocked, because, you know, things happen and, you know, who knows what the chemistry is. Every year is a little bit different. But, you know, they have everything that you would look for in a prohibitive preseason favorite with no obvious challenger.
Yeah, to me, the NCAA tournament this year was a lot of fun, and I'm a guy that loves to ride along with the underdogs in these tournaments, and for Auburn and Texas Tech to get in the Final Four, and it was just it was a fun year. I mean, you know, I enjoyed the heck out of it. With coaches, it seems, trying to find players that are going to be with them for 2, 3, 4 years in that program. Are we seeing that as a trend, or are we going to go back to the schools that bring in the one-and-dones and they've got such great talent as freshmen, they overcome the inexperience?
It's a great question. I mean,
I'm looking for information to start betting now in Vegas for the tournament next year.
You know, look, I think that, you know, in college basketball, the teams that are really going to be consistent, you kind of have a couple of different styles. You know, you have one style, you know, like and not many teams can do it, but like a Duke or a Kentucky or, shoot, like what Memphis is doing right now, where you stockpile a ton of highly talented players, and you're going to be inconsistent, but you're probably going to win a lot of games, because at the end of the day, when you can just overwhelm people with talent on a night-in, night-out basis, even if there's some more, it's a lot of times that talent is going to win out. Now, when you get into the tournament, that becomes difficult to win 5 or 6 games in a row, because a lot of times those teams don't shoot it very well. They don't have the chemistry, because they just can't have built that chemistry. So, you know, it's a little bit more, it's a little bit riskier. And then, you know, you get teams like a Virginia or like a Texas Tech that we saw this year, or like a Michigan State, you know, that wasn't overly talented, but they've got a system, They've got some experience. They can shoot the ball. You know, I think those are the types of programs that you would want to bet on a year-in, year-out basis. I think Villanova will get themselves back in there. You know, and obviously there are, you know, many others that I haven't named. And if you're Indiana, that's where you're trying to get to. You know, I don't, you know, Indiana's not going to be a, you know, like a Duke or a Kentucky and going after the, you know, the five-star one-and-done types all the time. I think Indiana wants to build its identity on defense, on having guys that stay around and develop, and you're starting to see that. The next thing that you need to see is the shooting, you know, because if Indiana had a little bit more of that last year, it would have been a much different season. And so that's the biggest thing that Indiana needs to add to the mix. But I think when you find those teams that have experience, you know, that play good defense and that shoot the ball, those are going to be the types of teams that just on a year-in, year-out basis you can count on to be consistent.
One thing that always surprises me as I watch these recruits announce who they are going to play for next year are the number of young men that go to, let's say, Memphis this year. I think they've got six recruits, and they're all quality young men as players coming in. Apparently, they're not math majors because there's only five that can play at a time, and you're limited to 30 games. So it just amazes me that there are good, solid programs that they could go in, start immediately, play the majority of the minutes, and yet they choose to align with Memphis.
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, it does fly in the face a little bit of kind of the assumption that players like that are entitled and selfish, because it seems like they're going to kind of play together, be part of building something, and maybe willing to sacrifice shots or sacrificing being the guy at another school, you know, to be part of a big ensemble cast at a place like Memphis. And you see that with guys that go to Kentucky, you know. So, but at the same time, you know, you're right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think that's why some of those situations can be ticking time bombs a little bit, because it's okay to say, hey, you know, we're all going to go play at Memphis and this is going to be great. But then you get there and there's still only five spots and there's still only one ball, you know, and these are guys who are used to getting shots, and can they actually, you know, kind of suppress their egos and their desires, you know, to get as many shots as possible to do what's best for the team. And the ones that do, those are the ones that are really successful. And I think that's why you see, you know, that style of recruiting tends to work better when there are a couple of established veterans there. And so, you know, so we're going to see, you know, we'll see how it works at Memphis, you know, see how it works at, you know, at a place like Duke too, where, I mean, you had, you know, three just, you know, generational type recruits, and they still, you know, couldn't win it all, because at the end of the day, they didn't have the chemistry. They didn't have the shooting to get it done.
Yeah, it's amazing. I had a couple of former students that went to Memphis and loved their experience there. One a volleyball player, the other a cross-country runner, and absolutely loved that school and that city. So maybe the barbecue's better, maybe the city's better. I've only been there a couple of times, but something, Penny and something bringing them into school. It's going to be interesting because Memphis came in as an unknown quantity in the recruiting wars, and he certainly has made his name and his school something to fear if you're these other schools like Kentucky and Duke and North Carolina, and you go on down the list, to have been searching for the one-and-dones, gladly will accept them and use them as the springboard for success. So Memphis took six guys off the board that might have gone to Kentucky, Duke, or North Carolina, or others.
Yeah, and the big question will be, what kind of staying power does it have? You know, there are some particular kind of elements that, you know, that Penny and that staff have right now that allowed them to do this. You know, he's been coaching, you know, AAU, happened to have a relationship coach, the top player in the class, James Wiseman, and some other players. And so that established relationship helped him get those recruits. You know, plus, you know, being a former NBA star and having a guy like Mike Miller on his staff, you know, kind of the pitch of, hey, we played in the NBA, we can help you get to the NBA. I mean, just playing in the NBA doesn't make you a great developer of talent, you know? Right. So right now, you know, they have these pre-established relationships and they're a bit of a blank slate because there aren't any actual, like, results to point to. And so in 3 or 4 years, when he doesn't have those long-term relationships with the top recruits and there's a track record of either success or failure, you know, winning games and putting guys into the NBA, and having them succeed, you know, that'll really be when we see, hey, is this real or is this not? You know, because, you know, Calipari was able to do all that and has been able to do all that on a consistent basis. He can point to an actual track record.
Correct.
You know, right now for Penny and that staff, it's all kind of, you know, projected, and but there's not any actual results to point to. So we'll see, you know, in 3 or 4 years if this has any staying power. Maybe it will, but, you know, kind of be skeptical about it until we see that.
Certainly looking forward to next season. It's always fun to follow. And, Jared, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, my pleasure. I always do, Lee.
Thank you very much. Jared Morris of Assembly Call. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You're listening to WXVW.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Lee Kelly sitting in for Matt Dennison on a Friday morning. Glad you're with us here on the Hoosier Report. Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star, our final guest here on this Friday. Good morning, Kyle.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
So far, so good. Well, we made it through football, basketball season, and a host of other high school sports. Now baseball's rolled around, and any teams around the Indianapolis area that have had outstanding seasons that we might see playing in the state championship weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that possibility. This is a little bit, I don't know if it's a, you know, if you'd say it's something of a down year, or, you know, maybe just some of the teams that normally are, you know, some of the premier teams in this area aren't quite as strong maybe as what you usually would expect. You know, Cathedral's not, you know, not as dominant. They're always a really good team. Center Grove is actually probably the best team. I think they're 19-2 last check before this week. So you know they're a team that you know you could see playing deep into the tournament. Cathedral's still good. They're I think 14-6 or somewhere in that range. And then Lawrence North ended up winning the county Marion County tournament this year, and they're always very solid. As well, but yeah, I mean, it's not what you'd say is just a super super good year around here for baseball, but still, you know, Center Grove, like I said, really good, and I think probably a year where, you know, you're going to see, you know, some of the teams in other parts of the state, you know, Crown Point always good, Bloomington North I know is good this year, Columbus North, so you know, some of those type of teams, New Albany, Jeffersonville I know always are good, but. There is a really good player around here. Southport's got a pitcher, AJ Short, Avery Short, who is you know, projected could be you know, potentially like a second round pick as a pitcher. So you know that'll be interesting to see. That draft is not too far from now. You know, just a few weeks away. So that'll be interesting to see. You know, where he ends up going, but. His team isn't necessarily all that great, but he's you know, really, really good as a pitcher.
Yeah, I saw a mock draft. Didn't even realize they had mock drafts for the Major League Baseball draft, but I should have. Somebody would have done it. But no Indiana kids in that first mock draft that I've seen. And so, you know, these I understand those are the elite of the elite, both college and high school, that are in that mock draft. But like you say, there's always a few kids around the state that baseball being what it is just doesn't receive the coverage that a basketball or football program would. So you don't necessarily know about them, but had the opportunity the last couple of years, 3 years, to see the state finals. And you always hear about a pitcher and you think, well, okay, how good can he be? And then you see him and you go, yeah, he's pretty doggone good. Mm-hmm. So baseball undercovered probably.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, I try to find stories in the spring. There's just not the, you know, the analytics or the metrics would tell us. They're just, you know, there's not the overall interest, you know, if you're just covering on a day-to-day basis that there is for basketball or football, you know, and, you know, there's just not the readership. And I do hear from people in the spring a lot, you know, saying, hey, why don't you cover, you know, and you try to cover, you know, you try to find the good stories and write about, you know, I wrote about a pole vaulter yesterday who honestly could be an Olympian at some point at Lawrence North. Just he's probably going to win state here this spring at Bloomington, and was great to talk to, and you know, a fun story to do. But again, stories like that, you know, you try to write them really well and all that, but they just don't have the, you know, maybe don't have the mass appeal of basketball and football at some rate. But definitely, you know, there are great stories to cover. I think, you know, there is a, when you mentioned baseball, there is a guy at Dre Jameson at Ball State who I know he played at Greenfield Central a few years ago, and you know, he has a chance maybe to get drafted, you know, fairly high too. But you know, we'll see. I don't know what'll, you know, it's hard to, baseball's a hard one to gauge because you just don't see these guys, you know, as much, you know, as far, you know, AAU basketball, you kind of get a sense of, right, he's good, and you know, you can see him play against each other. You don't see that as much with baseball, but you know, so there are some guys out there, and you know, I covered a guy, Nick Schnell, last year from Ron Colley, did quite a bit on him, and you know, he's now he's going to be starting his short season Class A, you know, baseball season here with the Tampa Bay Rays here pretty soon. You know, but he was a first-round pick last year, and you know, just a super, super talented guy. But I think he was 32nd overall in last year's draft, and got a big signing bonus. But so there are guys out there. It's just a matter of finding them and writing stories about them. And you know, the game coverage isn't as much, definitely as much in the spring. And it's kind of honestly a chance to take a little bit of the downtime. And get a little bit of vacation in too, before football and all everything else. You know, basketball start heating up again in the summer too.
Speaking of basketball, this is Indiana, so let's get back to that topic here this morning. It's on the paper today, I think, the Indy Star, that Reggie Bass, I believe a freshman at Muncie Central, thinking about going to prep school. And so I guess, first of all, have you heard anything about this? And secondly, your thoughts on prep school?
Yeah, I have. I've heard this is a possibility for Reggie Bass, you know, for a while, which, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know what to think exactly. I mean, to me, it's, you know, there's not a template answer on stuff like this necessarily. I don't know if it's I know there's people against, you know, that idea of in-state players going to prep schools. And for my own, you know, I've written about it before. We've had guys, you know, Jaron Jackson, you know, being the most recent example probably, who went from Park Tudor to La La Mir, which is here in the state, but you know, he doesn't play IHSA, didn't play IHSA anymore. You know, and there's been several throughout the years, Devontae Smith-Rivera back in the day, A.J. Hammonds, you know, off the top of my head, I know there's been several more, but Jalen Coleman went from Cathedral to La La Mir. You know, and I don't think there's a template answer for it. I know it doesn't make for a strong opinion to say that, but I think it's each kid's decision. I don't like it from my own personal perspective. I don't like it because it doesn't allow me to cover them anymore, you know, as far as, you know, being in the area. And I always, you know, from a selfish perspective, you want the most talented kids to stay around so you can see them play, you know, and, you know, so that's kind of been my answer to that question. But, you know, I get it to an extent. I think there's an element that you miss out on, you know, going to prep school. You're not, you know, playing with the guys you grew up with or the community that you grew up in. You know, I think there's an element you miss out by doing that and going to play somewhere where, you know, basically basketball and academics are hopefully academics are your life at that point. You know, Paul Scruggs, he's another one, left Southport to go to, you know, California to a prep school his senior year. You know, so there's been a lot, but I think it's, you know, I think there's been some bad decisions made. I think there's been some good decisions that have helped players get better. But I don't know how much does it really help you to go to a prep school for 1 year. You know, I always question that too. How much you really getting out of that? I know the prep school is getting a lot out of it. You know, they're getting a lot of publicity and a chance to build these mega teams and play in these tournaments and whatnot, and you know, get a paycheck to go play in these tournaments. You know, so that they're helping themselves. But how much does it help you as an individual? I think that's the question you have to kind of ask yourself. And maybe there's maybe there are family situations where you need to get somewhere else and get out of the situation that you're in. And I certainly can understand that. So, you know, I never want to be one to say, hey, that's a bad decision, you're doing something stupid, you know. So I think it's each person's personal decision. And I, like I said, I don't like it from a personal perspective of me covering them. But I don't have a huge problem. You know, if kids choose that route, they're going to be other, it's going to open up an opportunity for somebody else to play at that school. So yeah. That's, I think you have to look at it from that aspect.
Yeah, I agree. We don't know the family situations or backgrounds or scenarios these kids are in. So it's really hard to make a point. Down this way, we have a reverse scene going on in that there's a young man that's transferring from a prep school over in Louisville to apparently Silver Creek High School, 6'10 and a half young man, and I don't even know his name. I just heard about this the other day, but kind of rare for one to leave a prep school and go back to a public school.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That you know, clearly Silver Creek's got some good things going. There'd be a good reason to go there, I think, with the guys they have coming back next year, for the next 2 years, actually. So I hadn't heard that, but yeah, that's a would make sense, I guess. I think the draw of prep school is to go play with other, you know, similarly talented players, and you know, not only playing games against other, you know, out of state teams or whatever, but you know, in practice, hopefully you're, you know, iron sharpens iron type of situation. So, you know, maybe going to Silver Creek, he thinks he can get better by playing, you know, Kaufman and Cooper Jacoby, and certainly can understand that. But yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that, but that clearly would make them even better than what they will be next year.
Yep, I understand he's pretty good. I think he's a sophomore, I believe. I talked to one of the assistant coaches. Matter of fact, I asked him, I understand, as usual, there's a story this summer about a 7-footer transferring into Silver Creek. And I said, is that true? And he goes, nope. And I said, well, that's typical. You know, you always get these stories. And he goes, he's only 6'10 and a half. And I said, okay, all right, nice. I like that. So, well, anyway, Kyle, going to wrap it up here on a Friday morning. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again somewhere down the road.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks. Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star. We'll be back with a final comment or two here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison on WXVW. And welcome back to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Matt will be back with you on Monday. Thanks for joining this morning, and you're listening to WXVW.